We shall start with the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 12, verses 8 and 9. Before I start, I would like to just offer my obeisances to Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Jai Pataka Swami Niti Namine Namacharya Padaya Nita Kripa Pradayine Gora Katada Maudaya Nagara Gramatarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we have in front of us wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam that is also a literal incarnation of Lord Krishna. So it says that by reading and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we are actually associating with the Lord. Of course, there is lots of obstacles to actually experiencing in full those blessings that are given to us. And some of them are mentioned in Srila Prabhupada's purport, which we are just about to go through. So, verse 8, He, the Lord, was only thumb high, but He was all transcendental. He had a very beautiful, blackish, infallible body, and He wore a dress of lightning yellow and a helmet of blazing gold. Thus He was seen by the child. There is no purport to this verse. I'm moving to the verse number 9. The Lord was enriched with four hands, earrings of molten gold, and eyes blood red with fury. As He loitered about, His club constantly encircled Him like a shooting star. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is said in the Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, that the Supreme Lord Govinda, by His one plenary portion, enters into the halo of the universe and distributes Himself as Paramatma, or the Supersoul, not only within the heart of every living being, but also within every atom of the material elements. Thus the Lord is all-pervading by His inconceivable potency, and thus He entered the womb of Uttara to save His beloved devotee, Maharaj Parikshit. In the Bhagavad Gita 9:31, the Lord assured everyone that His devotees are never to be vanquished. No one can kill a devotee of the Lord because he is protected by the Lord, and no one can save a person whom the Lord desires to kill. The Lord is all-powerful, and therefore He can both save and kill as He likes. He became visible to His devotee, Maharaj Parikshit, even in that awkward position in the womb of his mother, in a shape just suitable for his vision. The Lord can become bigger than thousands of universes and can become smaller than an atom at the same time. Merciful as He is, He becomes just suitable to the vision of the limited living being. He is unlimited. He is not limited by any measurement of our calculation. He can become bigger than what we can think of, and He can become smaller than what we can conceive. But in all circumstances, He is the same all-powerful Lord. There is no difference between the Tam-like Vishnu in the womb of Uttara and the full-fledged Narayan in the Vaikuntha Dham, the kingdom of Godhead. He accepts the form of Archa-Vigraha, worshipable deity, just to accept service from His different incapable devotees. By the mercy of the Archa-Vigraha, the form of the Lord in material elements, the devotees who are in the material world can easily approach the Lord, although He is not conceivable by the material senses. The Archa-Vigraha is therefore an all-spiritual form of the Lord to be perceived by the material devotees. Such an Archa-Vigraha of the Lord is never to be considered material. There is no difference between matter and spirit for the Lord, although there is a gulf of difference between the two in the case of the conditioned living being. For the Lord there is nothing but spiritual existence, and similarly there is nothing except spiritual existence for the pure devotee of the Lord in his intimate relation with the Lord. This is finishes the purport of Srila Prabhupada. So I prepared to talk a few aspects from the purport following the what Srila Prabhupada mentioned. And firstly, Srila Prabhupada speaks of Brahma Samhita chapter 5. And the verse in this case, which Prabhupada mentioned about Lord being all-pervading and present in every atom, is the verse 35 of chapter 5, which is, you probably all know it, but I'm just going to read it to you so we can get the idea of the full verse, what Srila Prabhupada mentioning. Eko pyasau rachayitum jagadanda kotim ya chaktirasti jagadanda chayayadanta andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. He is an undifferentiated entity, as there is no distinction between potency and the possessor thereof. In his work of creation of millions of worlds, his potency remains inseparable. All the universes exist in him, and he is present in his fullness in every one of the atoms that are scattered throughout the universe at one and the same time. Such is the primeval Lord whom I adore. In the context of the of the verse, when Srila Prabhupada mentions that the Lord is not only within but without, it's actually speaking how he appeared to Maharaj Parikshit inside the womb in the size of a thumb. So one can say, where did Lord come from? Where did he come? Is there a place he comes from and he manifests? And when he disappeared, where did he go? Is there a place when he comes and goes from, or how does it all work? Well, as Srila Prabhupada mentions, Lord is within and without. He's already in every atom. He's present everywhere. So when he appeared to Maharaj Parikshit, that was out of his causeless mercy. He literally just became visible. He was already there in the womb. He didn't come from somewhere external. He was already there, but he decided to become visible because his devotee needed the help. So in that context, we are thinking, okay, well, how can we see the Lord? Why is this applicable only for devotees, like pure devotees like Maharaj Parikshit, or do we have any chance of ever encountering that mercy, or is it something we will say, well, ain't going to happen because I'm not Maharaj Parikshit or anybody from Bhagavatam, so how can we relate to all of this? Well, there is a good news. The good news is that I found a little quote here from in Chaitanya Shikshamrita from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. When I read it, I felt it was relating to this purport, and I felt relevant and very encouraging. This is just one part of it. The real life of the living entity is called Jiva Dharma, the soul's inherent nature. For the human being, Jiva Dharma is called Manava Dharma. Humankind's Dharma is of two types, secondary and primary, or incidental and inherent. Secondary or incidental Dharma takes shelter of matter, material qualities, and material relationships. The primary Dharma takes shelter of the pure soul. The primary Dharma is the Dharma of the soul. And the secondary Dharma is of no value. So, very... just to sort of say it in shorter, there is two natures that we are. There is a spiritual nature, which is spiritual, and there is material nature, that is when this spiritual nature is enclosed into material element, which is the body. And unfortunately, we identified with this. But really, we should be, through the process of Krishna consciousness, we are developing and hoping to identify and revive our eternal spiritual identity. How are we spiritual? Well, Krishna is Satchitananda. It says in the first verse of Brahma Samhita, is Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. There's a lot to say about this verse, but I will focus on Satchitananda. Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He's Sat, Chit, and Ananda. He's eternal. He's fully, always eternal. He's eternal. He's chit, full of knowledge, absolute knowledge, and Ananda, he's full of bliss. He's always blissful. There is no moment that he's not blissful. There is no moment that he's not aware of everything. And there is no moment that he's deteriorating in any way that we can try to think about. As a matter of fact, it says Krishna is inconceivable in the properties mentioned. So that word inconceivable also means, this is the dictionary translation, not capable of being imagined or grasped mentally. I think it's a really good explanation. We can't that's what Krishna is. We can't grasp him mentally. So no matter how much we try, if we are relying on our own efforts and ideas, it's just not going to happen. So how it is going to happen, that's what we're interested in. And how is he inconceivable? Well, short story about the frog in the well, this is us. You probably heard that story, just a short brief, that frog was in the well, spent from the tiny tadpole to the big fat, bloaty frog. That frog was in the well his whole life, and then one day bird came to drink. And as the bird came to drink the water, the frog says, "Oh, where are you coming from?" And bird said, "I'm coming from the ocean." And the frog was like, "Ocean? What is the ocean?" And the bird says, "Well, it's very hard to explain to you. Have you ever been out of the well?" "No, this is my well. I live here. Why would I leave my well? I love my well. It's still, it's round and it's got stale, smelly water, perfect condition to live in." And the bird was like, "Okay, I'll try to explain. It's a big body of water." "Big? How big?" "Is it big as this?" And the big fat frog is just puffed up even more. And the bird is like, no, it's like millions of times bigger than your well." And the frog goes, "Really? But this is my well. So is it bigger than this? How is it bigger than me then?" And then, anyway, so they were going back and forth. And finally, the poor frog, trying to show how big is the ocean, he puffed. He just left his body. trying to get bigger and bigger, and finally burst. So I feel sometimes like that. I'm trying, with my mind, I'm trying to understand Krishna, and it just comes to the point when I'm just getting like a brain freeze and headaches, and it's not going to work. Why is not working? Because he says Krishna can only be perceived with our spiritual senses, and this is what is mentioned, that our primary nature is Satchitananda in a minute form. So there is a connection to the ocean. Krishna is like an ocean, and we are like a drop of the ocean. The quality is the same, but the quantity is, there is huge difference. How can we quantify drop and the whole ocean? Can we say how much bigger is the ocean? Exactly, precisely. But in Krishna's case, it's even better. He's unlimited, so there is no way to quantify that. But he's Purnam, he's whole, and he's never deteriorating. But we are small. But in our spiritual nature, we are always the same. In that context, we are coming to the point, how do we perceive the Lord? Satchidananda Maharaj mentioned yesterday, we perceive Lord through chanting Hare Krishna mantra and reading Bhagavatam. But in this purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that Krishna appears in his deity form as Archa Vigraha. And I thought, well, that's nice purport, and I can relate to that. I've been attempting to do some pujari service for some time. So it felt that, first I thought it was a printing mistake here when I was reading. It said, he appears to accept the service of his different incapable devotees. I was thinking, incapable devotees? Why would Prabhupada say incapable devotees? And then I had a conversation with my husband. He says, yeah, it's not printing mistake. Incapable means we are incapable. In the sense, we can't perceive Krishna in our current state. Some of us maybe we can, but most of us can't. So Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, he appears in his deity, beautiful deity form, and it's mentioned that this deity form is not material. Although Krishna appears in the form of a marble or brass or clay, different forms. But Krishna, when we see the Lord, that is actually Krishna. According to the Shastra, the form of the Lord is non-different from Krishna. Now, when we see Krishna, we see a beautiful form of the Lord. He's standing on the altar, and we are like thinking, yeah, I'm here, I'm moving, and look at him, you know, he's there standing, I'm praying. But Krishna is more alive than we are. Krishna on the altar is Satchitananda, while we are encased in material bodies. So although it might appear externally, we are moving about and we are, you know, alive and breathing, and we can say Krishna is standing there quietly. He's more alive than we are. We just have no receiver to see that. Why is that happening? Well, right now, just to give an idea, we see the Lord, but we don't see him. How is that possible? Right now around us, there is lots of mobile phone signals, there is lots of TV signals, there is lots of things going on, definitely. But we can't, right now, we can't see it. Can we hear any radio in our ears? Or can we can't. We need a radio transmitter. We need something that will receive that information and translate it so we can understand it. I mean, this is a very simplistic understanding of Krishna, but right now Krishna is here. He says he's in every atom. Do we doubt the scriptures? No. He is everywhere. So why are we not seeing, like on this picture of Krishna coming like a little bubbles, lot of universes, Krishna is in every atom. Why don't we see every atom with Paramatma inside? Because our receiver, which is our spiritual senses, are not awakened. They're there. We are eternal. We are Jivara Svarupa Hoya Krishna Nitya Das. We are Jiva. Our Svarup is eternal form, spiritual form. We are Krishna Nitya Das. We are Nitya Das. We are eternal servants of Krishna, and we have eternal relationship. But something went wrong. We are here. So I'm not going to get into that now. But point is, how do we get out? So when we look at the Lord and serve the Lord on the altar as Archa Vigraha, we can, according to Brahma Samhita, his form is described beautifully. We have a deity form, which is built according to the Shastra. We invite Krishna to take shelter, to come and manifest. So he's there. And the way we see is by performing our devotional activity, and hopefully by practicing Krishna consciousness, we will come to the level when our senses, our spiritual senses, will wake up fully and become perfect receiver for Krishna. That our heart, our spiritual heart, will be clean, and Krishna will manifest in our heart. And that's the darshan. Sorry, can I have some water, please? Oh, thank you. So, just a second. So just again to go back, in our case, there is difference between spirit and matter. We are the spirit soul within the material body, but in Krishna's case, there is no difference. With or without, he is always eternal Supreme Lord. There is nothing different about Lord. When Krishna appears in deity form, in a Tam-like form to Maharaj Parikshit, he's the same Krishna with all his potencies. There is no... Even he appeared as a small size Vishnu form in front of Maharaj Parikshit. He did it because in the womb of a mother, I mean, if he would appear very big, then baby would be probably frightened. But he appeared in a perfect way that the Maharaj Parikshit can be reassured. His eyes were red out of anger because he was upset that... upset. I mean, in a way, in his relation to the devotee, he wanted to protect the devotee. He wasn't happy that somebody is trying to kill him. So he was there to protect. And I'll go back to the how can we see him. Just I want to go through this. I lost a bit of a plot. So I'm going back to this, that when Lord appears to protect his devotees, according Prabhupada mentioned Bhagavad Gita 9:31, that his devotee will never be vanquished. I found the quote that Prabhupada goes, and this is Rake Krishna Mare Ke, Mare Krishna Rake Ke. If Krishna wants to kill you, who can save you? And if Krishna wants to protect you, who can kill you? And I got this quote from Prabhupada's lecture in 69. In May, Srimad Bhagavatam 1, 5, 8, and 9, when he was describing how, this is just the example, how Krishna is the Supreme Lord in every circumstance. Ravana is about to be killed by Ramachandra, and in that moment, Parvati was talking to Shiva and saying to him, look, your devotee is about to be killed. He's been praying for your mercy. He wants you to save him. Save him then. He's totally devoted to you. What are you doing? Go and save him. And Lord Shiva just looked at her and said, I can't. And she was like, how can you not save him? He's your devotee. Go. You have to save him. What type of Lord you are? You can't save your devotee. What's the point then? But Lord Shiva said, no, he's destined to die because Lord Ramachandra decided he's going to die. And there is nothing I can do, nor would I dare to go against the will of the Lord. But so this is the example that Lord Krishna's will is there, that not even Lord Shiva, who we know is the Vaishnava Amshata Tashambhu, he's greatest of all the Vaishnavas, he's got numerous potencies, he's the Lord of material nature. He couldn't intervene and save Ravana because Lord Ramachandra decided, okay, this is it now, his time is up. So in that respect, we can say again, how can we relate to this? How does Krishna protect us? So anybody would like to just, I wasn't sure if I should do interactive or not, but I'll give it a go. So if anybody wants to say, how does Krishna protect us? Did anybody have experience of Krishna protecting them? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah. So protection of the Lord comes in a different forms. Does anybody have anything else would like to share?
Yes, Prabhu.
That's true. Yes, Mataji. Yes.
Paramatma, he will direct the external factors, other people, not to harm you, because he's in the heart as well.
Yes. So, although we might not be on the level, maybe on the level of Maharaj Parikshit, but I'm sure we all have experience that sometimes in life things happen and something is telling us, don't go that path, or don't go there, don't do that. And in some practical circumstances, like Prabhu was saying, we might want something badly. Krishna doesn't give it to us, and later on we figure out why. At the time we are like, but I'm praying to you so hard, Krishna, give me, I really want this. I really, 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 really want this. It's for my service. But Krishna is like, it's not happening. And then later on we figure out, because of something that manifest maybe later, there is some certain type of attachment, and should if we got what we wanted, would reinforce our material desires and probably take us away from Krishna consciousness. So Krishna is supremely independent. We can pray for protection, for anything, but it's Krishna's sweet will whether or not he will protect us. So somebody asked the question, but how does actually Krishna protect us? Devotees get sick, devotees suffer, devotees die, they leave their bodies. Where is Krishna in all of that? How is Krishna protecting us? Devotees have car accidents, especially Sankirtan devotees, when it happens, you know, when we are tired doing book distribution, driving back, attention is gone, some things go wrong. So how is Krishna protecting us in those circumstances? Where is Krishna? So I heard... anybody wants to say? Yes?
It came to my mind to keep asking. He makes us remember him. That is also protection. Or forget the things that will put us in trouble. Matas with the home now.
Very good.
And also, I think we understand that Krishna doesn't always protect the body, but protects the bhakti.
Correct. That was what I had in mind. I heard Vaisheshika Prabhu talking about this, and he gave an example of a devotee who was murdered while chanting. So somebody was saying, what happened there? And he said, the way we need to see it is Krishna doesn't protect the body necessarily, but he will protect the devotee, because there we are going back to what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. There is primary nature, which is spiritual, eternal nature, and secondary nature. Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shishi Gaur Nitai ki jai. So our secondary nature is the nature that is temporary, and that can be, we are under the modes of three modes of nature. We are influenced. That nature we identify with most of the time is our secondary nature. And sometimes Krishna might protect it, sometimes might not, depending what will bring us closer. Some devotees have tests that are a bit more heavy from external point of view. We see such a wonderful devotees, and they get so many difficulties with body. They externally looking, they suffer immensely, they're in pain. My spiritual master, His Holiness Jayapataka Swami, is to me like one of the examples that, regardless of the stroke and everything, he's still traveling the world and preaching. It's like unstoppable. And I'm thinking, we have a little headache and we stop. We're like, oh, I can't chant right now, I'll chant later. So it's just the consciousness of the pure soul is so connected with Krishna that nothing can stop the devotional service. It's anya bilashita shunyam. Service to the Lord is unconditional, and it's nothing to do with material world. And I read somewhere that even when we, like now I'm sitting here and talking, any little service we do, it needs to be approved by the spiritual, by Lord Krishna. We can't do anything Krishna conscious. Chanting, even eating prasadam, has to be approved. Because spiritual nature is so special and so pure and transcendental, we can't just access it because we want to. We are given it. It's a totally different paradigm shift, you know, that it's not because, yeah, I must have been devotee in previous lives, so I'm here now. It's none of the above. It's Prabhupada said, I created your good fortune. It's a causeless mercy. Think about it, causeless. There is no cause to it. Lord Chaitanya came and he gave it to us. Why? Because he loves us, and he saw there is absolutely no way these conditioned spirit souls will ever uplift themselves by themselves. Even with all the scriptures, it's hard. It's Kali Yuga, their memory is bad. I'm coming to save them. So actually we are getting Krishna's protection 24/7. He's like our personal bodyguard, 24/7 there. But we have to allow him to work. We need to allow Lord Krishna to be with us and to protect us. We have to trust him. How do we trust somebody? Krishna is a person. He is Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada always speaks like that. Why does he... Srila Prabhupada repeats that, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Look at Krishna. He's there. He's got the form. He's playing his flute. He's next to Srimati Radharani. He's a person. We dress him every day. You know, he has a bath every morning. We dress him in the clothes. We put fresh garlands on his body. We comb his hair. We put his crown on. We put peacock feather at the end. We finish dressing and we put peacock feather on the top, like a final touch. And then we offer him bhoga. He gets mangal sweets in the morning, first thing in the morning, lots of sweets, lots of sugar. Why do we do all these things if he's not a person? It doesn't make sense. But very often, more often than not, in our practical application of Krishna consciousness, we fail to act in relationship with Krishna. When we chant, we're not attentive. Maybe you are, I'm not. When we're doing service, we don't necessarily stop and think, I'm doing this for Krishna, I'll do my best. Because Krishna, it's for the Lord. When we do something for somebody, we want to make it presentable. When we do the offering, we make it look nice. So when Krishna appears to us with such a mercy, and Srila Prabhupada kindly brought Krishna to us, to the Western world, and to Bhaktivedanta Manor, and Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, and Gaur Nitai, they're all here. They're personalities. They're right here. That's a Satchitananda Vigraha. That form, it's purely transcendental. So we got a long way to go. If we can't see Krishna as Krishna right now and see him actually playing his flute and interacting, that means we have some work to do. So in that respect, what work do we have to do? How do we approach Krishna?
I answer your question, how we trust.
Yes. But it is a relationship. When we have friendship with devotees, this is like a training ground. It's a hospital. We all got our material natures that are very different. We are all very different. We have to agree to disagree. We have to understand we are all different devotees. But we need to meet on the spiritual platform of devotional service, which is the real life, where the real life starts. So yes, we will come up with different things and we might disagree with the person next to us because we come from different cultures, we are conditioned in a different way. But nevertheless, we need to accept it's not that important. Even if we disagree, let's try, what can we do to better our service? We need to meet on the platform of understanding of Krishna consciousness when we are accepting devotees as our friends. And even if sometimes goes pear-shaped, and we all have experience when somebody said something, we got upset, we get depressed, we get sad, we need to go above that. We have to rise above those feelings of temporary interactions, and we have to be open-minded and broad-minded to understand that every devotee is different. They will serve Krishna in a slightly different way to us. I mean, we are not clones. We are not all cloned to be all the same. We dress differently, we have preferences, because we are persons. We are also individuals. But somehow we get lost sometimes in Krishna consciousness. I notice sometimes we forget that we are different and we sort of demand that others be like us. And if they're not, we get upset. And it's very childish behavior. It's a very immature behavior, and it's Kanishtha level. We are on that, but we need to work towards something a bit more palpable, towards something that will be a bit more Krishna conscious, and we need to practice what we preach. We sit here every morning, we talk Bhagavatam, we talk philosophy, we discuss philosophy, we walk out the door. Oh, why you did this? Oh, you look at me wrong way. Oh, somebody's crying. Oh, this devotee told me that my cooking wasn't very good. And we get so much caught up in all these things. And yes, we take a feedback, but it's not end of the world. Everybody makes mistake. If you're the one to see the mistake, don't destroy the person. don't scream and shout at the devotees, because Krishna doesn't like that. You know, again, we are putting our likes and dislikes above Krishna's dislikes and likes. And this is where the Krishna consciousness comes in. Krishna consciousness, being conscious of Krishna. Like, Srila Prabhupada sits here. Do we actually feel Prabhupada is right here watching us all? But Krishna is everywhere with us as well, and Srila Prabhupada. But when we act, when we deal with devotees, we need to take their guidance and understand Krishna acts. That protection, what you were saying, comes from through devotees. We might not be able to see Krishna right now, right here, but Krishna manifests Krishna manifests himself to us through devotees and through deity form and through Bhagavatam and through attentive chanting. There is so many ways. But like in the story Sachana Maharaj said about the person who said, I want God to save me. So I don't know who were there yesterday, but he was saying how there was a man, there was flood going on, and he climbed up on the top of the roof, and he was very devoted to God. I think he was Christian. But and then people said, they were coming by with the boat, and they said, come, jump in. No, I'm here, I'm waiting for God to save me. And then next moment, they were like, you're crazy, you should jump on the boat, you're going to drown. No, I'm here. So next moment, helicopter was above. They put the ladder down for him to climb up, and he wouldn't. He was, no, I'm waiting for God to save me. You go on, people. I'm very sincerely praying to God to save me, and I'm waiting for him to come and save me. Anyway, he drowned. He left his body. So when he left his body, he met somewhere in heaven. He met God. This is just a story. So he said, oh, but why didn't you save me? And the God, Krishna, says to him, but I tried. I came twice to you. I came to you, but you didn't recognize that. I came to you to save you, and you said no. So sometimes we wait for Krishna to do something for us or save us or whatever, but really, as we develop spiritually, we should be able to perceive that. Understand, I mean, that little, what Maharaj was saying, we are working hard, but then there is, on the other side of the road, something comes to us suddenly. That's mercy of the Lord. It comes to us. We need to be able to catch it and recognize it. And one of the very important things how we can catch it and recognize that mercy is that we take Krishna consciousness very seriously and deeply. So it's not a ritual. Being a devotee, practicing Krishna consciousness, is not a ritualistic activity that we just, I've done my rounds, been there, done that, I'm doing Bhagavatam now, I walk out, is that, I'm going to have prasadam, I'm going to do my service. It's not a mechanical process. We often fall into that when we feel I'm doing something and we feel, but we have not, for some reason the taste doesn't develop. So what's missing? So we are here for 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years. Why are we not like 100% Krishna conscious yet? What's wrong? What's wrong? So we are doing our sadhana, we are following our spiritual master, we are following Srila Prabhupada. What's missing? Anybody? Yes, Prabhu. Sorry? Sorry, a bit louder. Anartas, okay. But Satyananda Maharaj also mentioned the practicing of Krishna consciousness, it has to be taken on a deeper level as a very important thing. So whatever we do, we need to do it conscientiously. It's not just about doing mechanically or doing because I've had to do. I made a promise, those of you who are initiated, I made a promise, I'll do this. So we do it because we have to. We need to understand why we're doing something. Why are we doing whatever we are doing? Why are we doing it? what's the ultimate goal? Why are we all here, sitting now here in the temple room, listening to Bhagavatam class? Why are we all here? What's the end game? What's the goal? To love Krishna, to develop, to revive. Somebody says we. Sort of convert ourselves, but we don't. We actually revive. Everything is already here. It's like a pact in a seed. And then we have to water it and let it come back. So we are not really doing anything artificial or difficult. It's all is there. So we are reviving our spiritual identity and hoping that one day Krishna will be there for us, like in the case of Maharaj Parikshit. And I think time is running out. So somebody was asking how so it says that Krishna comes to us in a different ways, and also the process by which we achieve Krishna. Maharaj mentioned we should read Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8, Verse 4. So if anybody wants to take notice for themselves, that's something he said we should study the verse and purport of that to understand that we should how we should practice Krishna consciousness. And he mentions Shraddhadan, seriously with attention. Then we need to practice reflection, which means we are hearing something, we are reading something, we should discuss it with devotees, we should talk about And that deepens our understanding of Krishna consciousness. And lastly, we need to apply it. Means what we are talking about, we need to practice. Otherwise, it's pointless. Well, there is benefit, but really, we won't reap the same effect. We won't have the same benefit unless we practice what we are talking about and what we are reading about, and which means developing Vaishnava qualities, interacting with devotees in a nice way, doing devotional service, preaching, helping others in Krishna consciousness. So whatever we've got, we need to give. And that's that when Lord Chaitanya comes in with his mood of spreading Krishna consciousness and helping every conditioned soul get the same gift like we do. So I will end here. I hope this might be first and last time you see me. Depends of what feedback we get after this. So please, if anybody has any questions or comments or feedback, maybe if you have feedback, tell me privately. I might be a little bit embarrassed.